Welcome to the TV Deets podcast. My name is Brett and I'm the guy behind the blog. An extension of tvdeets.com, join us for a brand new episode each week as we break down the latest unscripted news and ratings and share exclusive piping hot tea on all of your favorite reality shows. Now, let's get into it. Reality TV addicts, and welcome to another episode of the TV Deets podcast. We have two explosive Bravo interviews to talk about this week: Kenya Moore's sit down with Carlos King and Bethany Frankel's three-parter with Vanderpump Rules reject Raquel Rachel Levis. Plus, the Roni reboot ratings hit a series low, Below Deck Down Under calls in Joao, and my first impressions of the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City season 4 premiere. All of this and more coming up in the next hour of the TV Deets podcast. First up, I need to talk to you about Carlos King's interview with Kenya Moore. Now, you already know Carlos brought the tea with his interview with Nini in the last couple weeks, and now he's hosted her frenemy Kenya on his podcast Reality with the King. Okay, I have to say it, you guys, Kenya is so beautiful to me, it's ridiculous. And love her or love to hate her, I would definitely recommend you give this interview a little listen. But because this is the TV Deets podcast, I'm going to give you my thoughts on the interview right here, unedited and unfiltered. Now, I don't want to compare Kenya's interview with Carlos to Nini's, but if you're looking for those explosive tidbits like we got from Nini's interview, they're just not there with Kenya's. She does give some really interesting scoop about her earliest seasons on the show, but unlike Nini, she is still employed by NBC Universal, and I'm sure that had something to do with what she could and could not say during this interview. You know, one of the most interesting parts to me about the whole thing was how Portia and Kenya came onto the show during season 5. Now, a lot of Housewives fans refer to seasons 5 and season 6 as some of Atlanta's best, if not franchise best, and a lot of it has to do with the iconic double edition of Kenya and Portia. So in this interview, Kenya talks about how she and Portia became full-time housewives and revealed that if it wasn't for Kim Zolciak storming out of that infamous season 5 lunch, we may never have gotten Portia as a housewife. No, seriously, take that in. I want to play for you a clip of what Kenya said. Let's listen.
They went on strike.
Against Kim. They did not like that Kim. Now remember, Portia wasn't cast. I was cast, right? They weren't looking for anybody else. The casting was closed.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know this.
Yes, the casting was closed. When Kim, when they, because I remember sitting at the lunch, and I believe this lunch was televised.
No, it was. It's when Kim shut the camera.
Yes.
Portia wasn't there.
No, she wasn't there. They cast Portia after Kim walked off because then it was like they didn't know what was going to be happening with Kim, and so Portia was the replacement housewife. No shade to Portia.
No.
I'm just saying how it happened. Yes.
No.
Yes, because remember the number of housewives they had. I think at the time it was
six.
Six. They didn't need seven. They never have been seven of Atlanta. Not from my memory.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Never been seven. Even to this day, I don't think they've ever had seven. So when she walked off, that opened up the casting again and said, okay, we have this other girl. Let's look some more. And then Portia came, and I don't know who else. But yeah, that's how that happened.
So the housewives went on strike.
Yep, which was a great thing because they came together, which I admired. They did not like the way that Kim was receiving preferential treatment. And they band together and was like, we're not going to work this week. So they were like, okay, well, what are we going to do? Production is down for a week. Let's get this other girl, audition her, because now we don't know what's happening. Kim's walked off. Let's look at what else we can film. And so that's when they called me to come in to go to Portia's event. and Portia was very interesting. And actually, we had, before the event, we had a lunch. We had a lunch together. I remember that. We had a lunch, and she was really sweet. And you know me, I'm always sizing people up, so I'm like listening to her little things she would say, and I was like, okay. We had it. It was a fine lunch. Like, it was nothing wrong with the lunch. Then when I get to the event, and it was just little things that I was seeing. Like, it was an event for charity for her grandfather, mm-hmm. but she received a Chanel bag, you know, in front of all these people, and I was like, why? Like, it was just my natural thought. Like, is this the right time to, like, give your wife a Chanel bag? Like, it was just very odd to me. So it was just little things I would see. But people think it was, they have a different take. Again, they always look at my response, but they don't look at what was done to me. So the thing with Portia is, okay, yeah, sure, she screwed up my title. Plenty of people do it. I think they're a lot of people think they're one and the same. They're both prestigious titles. Miss mm-hmm. America, Miss USA, right. They're the same. It was her reaction. Like, it was like, ah, ha, ha, you know, like, oh, whatever, girl. You know, whatever. Like, no, it's not whatever. It's Miss USA. Like, I'm telling you that you got it wrong. Don't go, oh, whatever, ha, 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 ha. No, say, I'm so sorry for that. You know, don't embarrass me. So it was that. I remember going out getting some air. So this is when I think they kind of took her aside. Like, she came out, she was polite at first, she came back, and then that's when the insults started to fly. Like, she was like, you know, you're leaving, you can just go, you can just go to the curb. I remember this almost, yeah. Like, you can go to the curb where you belong or something.
Yes.
And I was like, well, now it's turned. See, I didn't insult you. I walked away. I did not say anything to you. I did not insult you. One of my triggers is when people insult me, and especially when it's uncalled for. I don't think people know that about me. I don't like to be insulted because I'm going to play nice with you, but I'm not going to hit you first. When you hit me is when I have to return with something much stronger. So, and I think people know that.
They know that now, yes.
So she hit me with these insults. It's like, wait, I'm on the curb? Like, wait, why do you have to insult me, girl? You just insulted me there. I didn't say anything to you. Now we are out on the curb, and now you're just like, all of a sudden you're a different person and you're like doing the most.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that started. People didn't see it that way. They looked at this young, cute girl. Oh, so aloof. Oh, it's okay. She's not that now, but she was then.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Cause one thing I admire most about people is intelligence. I think people know that. You know, I like a smart, pretty girl. You know, I live for, you know, I live for a smart, pretty girl. So, you know, I'm a girl, you know, I keep me a smart, pretty girl. So, you know, so I'm like, no, I'm not jealous. I'm not, cause I keep a dollar worth of dimes around me. You know that. Come on now.
Oh, you better.
You know that. So please don't come over here talking about some beauty. Cause I have seen beauty in my life.
Hey, Tracy Edmonds.
Shit. You know, Tracy Edmonds, Tyra was my best friend. Is my one of my best friends, yeah. Even to this day. So please don't act like I'm jealous of this. You know, I'm not. Let's just be clear. I can appreciate beauty at its finest. So so that's how all that started. We were born because they went on strike.
Did you guys catch that? We were born because they went on strike. If that isn't iconic, I don't know what is. I mean, Kenya was on the top of her game through this whole interview. The shade is top notch. Not a smart, pretty girl, honey. I mean, the whole thing is just too much. I loved it. Now, when I tell you I would watch a whole behind-the-scenes special on just the casting of Kenya and Portia, I honestly would. Now, production casting Portia as a full-time housewife after Kim stormed off is genius, and honestly, it's the type of pivoting and thinking we just don't seem to get from production now. Kenya and Portia will always be one of Bravo's most iconic feuds, and while I'm totally Team Kenya, I am truly Team Entertainment, and I think the show was at its best when these two were on the cast together. Another super intriguing part of Kenya's interview with Carlos for me, though, was her discussing the overall casting process and how much work potential housewives had to put in even before they would snag a peach. Now, this is crucial. I want to play that clip for you, and let's listen to Kenya talking about the early days of casting on Atlanta.
When you were starting out, not auditioning, so I want to explain to people how it works.
How it worked back then.
Because yes. Now anybody could get on Housewives. It's no longer.
Yes.
At one point in time, the Real Housewives of Atlanta was a Soho House membership.
Yes, it was. You better say that again. Some people don't know who Soho House is, so maybe explain.
Okay. Okay. So Soho House is an exclusive club.
Yes.
It's
top tier
restaurant, lounge. Mm-hmm.
Celebrity only.
Celebrity driven. There's one in West Hollywood, Miami.
Now, before it was just LA.
Yeah, it was just LA, but now they have LA, New York, Miami.
London.
Yeah.
They're all over the world now.
Mm-hmm. But you got to pay like $5,000 a year to be a part of the membership.
And be referred. You can't just pay your money and get in. You have to be referred.
You have to be referred by two referrals.
Yes, that are already members.
Yes. So they don't let anybody in.
No, they do not.
You got to be, and you have to submit a hit shot.
Yes, you do.
I'm a member. In case y'all were wondering, I am a member. Catch me if you can. At one point in time, the Real Housewives of Atlanta was like a Soho House membership. Now it's like a playground to where it's free to the public and you don't have to do anything to get in but arrive with your cooler and your rehearsed reads and being prepped and having a battery in your back with AA batteries and a charging station that was meant for a Tesla, but it's really for these new girls to wind them up like a rag doll. And, I'm sorry, I forgot my line of questioning. I went to another stratosphere. Anywho, I'm back now. At the time when it was a privilege to be on the show.
When it was the show to be on.
Many girls auditioned.
Yes.
Many girls were told, bye-bye.
Yes.
What people don't know is this, and you tell me if I got the number wrong. You filmed for over a month.
Oh, over a month, yeah.
Without being an official housewife.
Right, and without pay. They didn't pay me. That was the reason, eventually I was like, I'm out of here. If you don't know it by now, you're never going to know it. And so I'm gone. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
I know how to walk away. That's the one thing about me. I don't do things just for money. You know that? The history of me being on this show tells you that. If I'm not happy, if I don't like the way things are going, I'll just say, it's not working out. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yes, back then, anyone who was auditioning or wanting to be a part of the cast went through this rigorous filming. They would film you alone. They would film you with your man. They would film you with your children. They would film you out and about. And maybe if you kept making the cut, you would film with a housewife. Or if you didn't know a housewife already. I knew Lawrence, so I would film with Lawrence. That was my,
He
was my introduction. Yes. So Lawrence was my introduction to the cast. And so from there, in a scene, he might say, if it's going well, Phaedra's having a get together tomorrow. Do you want to come? Oh, well, I don't know who Phaedra is, in real life. So I'm like, well, sure. I don't know what to expect. I don't know these people, So that's how it worked. And the great thing about that casting process is that you had to earn your right to be a housewife of Atlanta. You had to earn it. It wasn't like, oh, this girl looks good. Oh, she looks good on paper. Let's make her a housewife. Girls are getting their contracts before they even meet us. And so then it blows up when they do meet us and they can't keep up and they're not a good fit. We've seen it season after season. It doesn't work. You need to be tried and tested. That is it. You need to have all these girls. Do you remember the Nene had an event?
Yes, season 5.
The success event, whatever. And all the potential housewives were there. I mean, you had Jerry Stackhouse's wife. You had all these, prominent, beautiful women of Atlanta. I mean, they were not only beautiful, but they were rich and, they were successful. They had husbands. They were the quintessential what you would think is a housewife of Atlanta. And the girls
and for my audience, this is season five.
Season five.
It's become a meme. Is when NeNe walks out like this. It's a meme now. And Kenya Moore takes a microphone and said, okay, now that we're done with the clown show. So for my audience, is that scene. Continue.
That was a reference because I was like, I was amongst a bunch of clowns. Like they were, and I'm not to calling the girls that now. For me, it was like, why am I here? I'm freaking Miss USA. Why am I being auditioned? I don't audition, honey. It's offer only. And I was looking around like, why am I being auditioned? Really? I was so offended.
Absolutely crazy, right? So basically, Kenya is calling up producers and letting them know that the casting process isn't working. And honestly, she's right. Now, Carlos, I have a few points for you when it comes to casting Love and Marriage, but I'll let that slide and save that for another episode of this podcast. Now, had production on Atlanta kept up with the amount of test filming and auditions like they used to do in the earlier seasons, I don't think we would have ended up with Sonia as a housewife. I don't think we would have ended up with Manietta and Courtney as friends. I mean, like a lot of other cities, Atlanta has chewed up and spat out so many rotten peaches at this point, it's ridiculous. Like, imagine if this was the process now. We could have avoided so many one-and-done housewives across the franchise. Elizabeth Lynn Vargas, Diana Jenkins, I mean, the list goes on and on. I really find it hard to believe Bravo is test filming these women for a month, unpaid, like they put Queen Kenya through. But that's just my thoughts. Now, if you're a regular listener to the TV Deets podcast, then you know I've actually been enjoying this season of Atlanta, but I do get that the show just doesn't seem to be landing with a lot of fans right now. In NeNe's interview with Carlos, she mentioned that Kenya doesn't seem to want to play with the other cast members, and after hearing Kenya's interview, that theory makes total sense to me. So, Kenya's a great housewife, right? She's delivered some iconic moments, and I get that we aren't necessarily seeing that side of her this season. Personally, I agree with NeNe and think that Kenya is a bit bored with this group, like we are as viewers, and especially with Courtney. I mean, she didn't want to give Courtney 2 seconds during the Portugal trip, and it's probably because Kenya knows that Courtney won't be asked back for another season. If the talent already knows that during filming, production, you have a problem. Now, while Atlanta has remained steady in the ratings this season, it is down compared to season 14. So I do expect Bravo to make some cast changes ahead of season 16. Now, here's some exclusive Real Housewives of Atlanta scoop for you. I've heard that Bravo has seen all of the negative fan commentary surrounding the show this season, and they are seriously considering a New York-style reboot with an all-new cast. So you heard that right. Bravo is reportedly considering rebooting the Real Housewives of Atlanta. With the New York ratings in the gutter, however, that idea just doesn't make that much sense to me, but that is what I'm hearing. And if I'm being real, anytime the network listens to the fans, it turns out to be a mistake. I mean, the same people that wanted Dorinda fired from New York immediately regretted it the season after. And remember when we all wanted Lisa Rinna gone from Beverly Hills? That season hasn't even aired yet, and already some fans are predicting it will be boring. It's not. Tamara and Vicky on Orange County, they had to go, but now, just 2 seasons later, both are back. I mean, my point is, let's hope Bravo doesn't rush into a casting switch up and instead takes a good, close look at how the season will be produced because, girl, they need some tips. From one explosive Bravo interview to another. Now, unlike the Carlos King interview with Kenya Moore, I could not bring myself to listen to Raquel, I mean Rachel's interview with Bethany, but that doesn't mean I don't want to talk about it here on the podcast. First of all, I'll tell you why. So, unlike Bethany's interview with Jill Zarin or the NeNe Leakes interview with Carlos, Rachel was never an iconic Bravo celebrity. I mean, this girl joined Vanderpump Rules all the way back in season 5, and did not give us a single moment until season 10. And that moment? Oh, It involves betraying your best friend and sleeping with her boyfriend for months. Super classy, right? Plus, this interview was three parts, if you can believe it. Three parts! So, as if appearing at the reunion and scoring a one-on-one with Andy wasn't enough, Rachel apparently needed a three-part interview with Bethany to fully explain why she slept with Tom Sandoval. Okay, then. Now, I'm not here to shame Raquel's actions. I mean, Rachel's actions. I did that the entire time season 10 aired. But I am here to call out the bullshit. And this interview with Bethany is complete bullshit, and that's coming from someone who actually sees Bethany's side in her ongoing fight against Bravo. Now, because I didn't actually listen to the interview, I'm going to use Best of Bravo's Instagram notes. So shout out to Best of Bravo on Instagram. I love you. So the first thing that stood out to me is that Rachel is upset that Bravo has been running to the bank during Scandoval and that the cast has made money off of this when she has been portrayed as the villain. So I guess Rachel's talking about like the Uber One commercials and all the stuff that Ariana got, the Lay's partnership, all of that stuff. I mean, Rachel even said in this interview, it's unfair that she didn't make a penny off the scandal and compared her salary to that of Bethany's interns. So this is in between saying she is sorry for hurting Ariana while also pointing out that they were never best friends, I might add. So, super clear there. But let me stop right there. You don't understand why you didn't get to profit off of this affair? Girl, the issue here with Rachel is that she's not a 21-year-old kid, okay, you guys? She is almost 30. It's almost like she's reverting back to that Bambi-eyed bitch from seasons past when we all know there is so much more to her character than that. I mean, we've seen the show. Like, we have watched your behavior. The funniest thing about Bethany and Rachel trying to say she was underpaid is Bravo almost immediately leaking to TMZ that she made over $350,000 for season 10. I mean, that was too good. Now, Lisa Vanderpump actually spoke to TMZ about Rachel's interview with Bethany and denied a lot of the claims, including the ones that she was underpaid. I want to play Lisa's comments.
Lisa, how are you doing?
Good, but that doesn't work.
It doesn't work?
No.
I'll tell the guy. Okay. Listen, it's come out that Raquel is not returning. Did she ever talk to you about coming back this season?
Yeah, when she was in the facility, her team kind of texted and emailed us. We wanted to make sure she was in a good place first. Yeah, I was going to do like a one-on-one with her, you know.
And she made it clear that she wanted to come back.
Well, she talked about it. The team reached out, but in the end, I think she decided not to, you know.
Well,
the cast don't really, you know, they don't really believe anything she says, so there's no point in her.
Did she ever call you to tell you she wasn't coming back, or did she just leave you kind of
high and dry? I did speak to her, and we talked about doing a one-on-one.
And
no,
you know
she
why
was strong at the reunion, you know?
Yeah, why do you think she's not coming back?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really understand anything she does.
What do you say to the people that think that the show isn't going to be able to be successful without her?
It was successful before her, before she wanted to join and hooked up with James.
Or the fans that think that they are deserve their, to know the rest of the storyline, like to, you know, a little closure.
Well, there was no, they heard it all. The only thing I wanted to know was, you know, talk about her growth and her thoughts after she'd been in the facility.
One last question. Rachel says that Tom Sandoval's going to be a producer this season on Vanderpump Rules.
Rachel says what again?
That Tom Sandoval is going to be a producer this season on Vanderpump Rules.
That's hilarious. No.
Why? She's well, not?
No, what? He's not going to be a producer. I'm executive producer and creator of the show, and I never heard that before. But I don't really understand anything she says.
Why do you think she would say that?
Why did she say anything? I have no idea. I've got to
You think
to
she's
work.
Just a big pathological liar?
I didn't say that.
Thank you, Lisa.
My messy LVP. This interview is just one reason why I can't quit Lisa Vanderpump. So you heard in that clip that Rachel did want to come back to Vanderpump Rules originally, with her team kind of planning this one-on-one with Lisa while she was in treatment. But in the end, Rachel decided not to move forward with coming back, and LVP makes it pretty clear why. I mean, the cast doesn't believe anything this girl says. Now, back to this interview she did with Bethany. Speaking about season 11, Rachel revealed that Tom has apparently been offered a producer's credit, so it seems like he's being rewarded for Scandaval. Now, this is where things get really gross. You did hear in that last clip with LVP, she denied that, but Rachel did bring up during her interview with Bethany that, yeah, for some reason, Tom may be rewarded for the high ratings that Scandaval brought the show. Now, clearly, I'm not a fan of Rachel, but I'm not a fan of Tom Sandoval either. As an OG Vanderpump Rules viewer, I've always thought that the men on this show were trash, and that includes Sandoval. In this interview, Rachel said that the infamous FaceTime video was recorded by Tom without her consent, and I have to be clear, that is so wrong and just, you know, so gross. I feel like this allegation was made in the press at the time, and if I'm not mistaken, I feel like that's what Rachel's team was claiming to Bravo. It was almost made out like she was saying that so that the video wouldn't be included on the show, but hearing about it from her perspective is actually really disturbing. No one deserves to be treated like that or filmed without their consent, point blank. But according to Rachel, Tom isn't the only one allegedly being protected by Bravo. According to Rachel, that benefit extends also to James Kennedy. So you guys saw the news that Kristen Doughty will be starring in a new spinoff alongside Jackson Brittany, right? Well, here's where things get kind of interesting. So in this interview, Rachel said that Bravo only greenlit that spinoff so that Kristen would keep claims about physical abuse on James's part to herself. So Rachel, she believes that James had been physical with Kristen and told Bethany that she hopes that behavior will come to light. If this is true, that is also really, really gross on Bravo's part. Now, I have heard about these rumors before, you guys, about James allegedly being physical towards Kristen. I believe Kristen has written about that in her book without, you know, specifically naming James. And if you guys follow Your Moms Are Watching on Instagram, shout out to Your Moms Are Watching. Love you. You will know that, yeah, Kristen has basically confirmed that James was physically abusive and that there was so much more to their relationship dynamics that kind of never made it onto the show. Now, you can see through Scandaval, production has kind of made James into a victim, and I think that's where Kristen is coming from and why, you know, that came up once again while all of this was breaking. You know, the problem here, however, is that Rachel and Bethany, these are the two that we're talking about. So you couldn't get two worse people to put forward all of these cases. I'm all for reality stars wanting to unionize and to be treated fairly and to be compensated fairly. But honestly, Bethany interviewing Rachel is really going to hurt her cause. And to me personally, it has me second guessing Bethany's motivations. Like, even in this interview, they're talking about salary and Rachel's upset she didn't make any money off of Scandaval. And then it comes out the same day that she made $350,000. Like, these are the things that don't add up to people. And so for everything that Rachel and Bethany says that maybe is true, there's something that's been directly contradicted. So that's where my issue is. It's really hard to know where the real story lies. Like, I feel like if Bethany really wants to take down Bravo, she's going to have to get bigger talent than Rachel Levis on board, because this just isn't it. And that's the weird thing about this whole situation, right? Like, both things can be true. Bethany Frankel and Rachel Levis can be horrible, unlikable people, but they could also be making valid points about the treatment reality stars receive. I'm somewhere in the middle. You know, while this Rachel interview seems to have garnered a lot of attention with Bravo fans right now, I don't feel like it will have the longest legs. I mean, filming on season 11 has almost finished. They're expected to wrap, I believe, in the first couple weeks of September. And while Rachel dominated a lot of the headlines during production, a whole season without her is in the can, and I'm told that it's fire. So I'll be watching this situation with Bethany closely, and I want to hear your thoughts. What did you think of Rachel's three-part interview? And is Bethany's campaign against Bravo losing or gaining steam? Let me know. Mm-hmm. Now for this week's ratings recap. So taking a look at Bravo, The Real Housewives of Atlanta was once again the network's top show of the week with a 0.23 in the person's 18 to 49 demo and 780,000 live viewers. Roni hit a series low with a 0.11 demo and just 439,000 viewers, while Crappy Lake hit a season low at a 0.06 and 303,000 viewers. Below Deck Down Under showed no signs of slowing down, however, scoring a season-high 0.24 demo and 873,000 viewers with Episode 8. Episode 9, which aired right afterwards, earned a strong 0.23 in the demo and 803,000 viewers. Now, did you guys catch the casts of The Real Housewives of Atlanta and The Real Housewives of Orange County on Celebrity Family Feud this week? Hilariously, that episode aired on ABC at the same time as RHOA and earned a massive 0.39 demo and 3.6 million viewers. Now, this is broadcast and not cable, so it's like comparing apples to oranges, but still, that's huge, and it's so interesting to me that almost 4 million viewers watched Trey fuck up. That is too funny. We do need to talk about these New York reboot numbers, though, because Andy, we have a problem. Like I said, this week's episode earned a series low with a 0.11 in the demo and 439,000 live viewers. Previously, Season 13's Secrets Revealed episode held that record with a 0.112 in the demo and 542,000 live viewers, and that was back in September 2021. Now, what makes this especially interesting is that this is basically half of the average audience for Season 13. So that season averaged a 0.22 in the demo and 817,000 live viewers, which again puts this Roni reboot at pretty much a 50% drop off. Now, a lot of you have asked me about streaming and DVR numbers, and while I'm sure the show grows once those numbers are taken into account, it's time we start getting real about the stats. Just because we like the women or we think the show is refreshing, it doesn't mean it's a success for the network. And with the numbers dropping so heavily each week, it's time that we actually start calling it what it is. It's a flop, guys. So let's look at these numbers. Even if the show were to double with DVR, that only brings us to last season's live average. So whichever way you look at it, the show is down considerably from season 13, and with the current state at Bravo, I could see the network going in a few different directions. So first, I have this thought, and it's a crazy thought, but that's what this podcast is for. Do you guys think we'll even get a reunion for Roni season 14? Now, I have to ask because we're about halfway through the season and Bravo hasn't asked for any reunion questions. We've barely seen any drama between the women at all, although I do know it looks like that will pick up with episode 6. And considering the network broke the mold and canceled the reunion for season 13, I could see them doing the same thing with season 14 and moving right into production on season 15. Now, whether the show gets a reunion or not, we will certainly see some cast changes for season 14, but only time will tell. If the cast will feature more new faces, or if we'll see some of the OGs make a comeback. Like, could you imagine Sonia and Luann interacting with this group on season 15? Like, I can see it. So, I know that's getting ahead of myself, but I wanted to throw it out there because the live ratings are really low. Now, I know a lot of people watch on Peacock the next day and they stream it and things like that. But again, live ratings are really an indication of a show's popularity. So, like I said, if this show doubles even, or, you know, yeah, doubles in once DVR and streaming is taken into account, that would really, like I said, only bring us to the numbers of season 13. So I do find it hard to believe that, you know, Roni is just experiencing massive growth on Peacock unlike any other Bravo show. Now that's possible, but I just, like I said, I find that unlikely. So let me know how you're feeling about Roni so far. Why do you think the numbers aren't reflecting the fan positive commentary? And do you think we'll get a reunion for season 14? I'm curious, so let me know. to talk all things Below Deck Down Under. Now, last week on the podcast, I talked about Luke and Laura's disgusting inappropriate behavior, both on screen and off screen with their ridiculous social media antics, but this week, we're moving forward. Well, sort of. Joao is back on Down Under and Aisha is not happy. Now, by the way, like Harry, I'm going to warn you right now, I'll have trouble saying Joao's name throughout this segment and much of the rest of the season, so bear with me. Basically, after Captain Jason decided that both Luke and Laura needed to go, the boat needed some replacements, and production knows what they are doing by bringing in a familiar face. This is a classic Below Deck move, and if you're a longtime Below Deck fan like me, you remember that Joao and Aisha actually first interacted back on season 3 of, I believe it was Below Deck Mediterranean, and the two did not get along at all. I mean, Aisha even had Joao blocked on social media when he arrived on Down Under, so very interesting. Now, despite being a captain on a smaller boat in real life, Joao is joining Down Under as a second officer and is claiming that he wants to gain some experience from Captain Jason. Now, knowing Joao, this is interesting because I feel like that could be a source of potential tension too. Like, he's coming in, he's already a captain. So I'm interested to see, and stay tuned for that. One thing I do like about Joao, though, is he does seem kind of upfront. So the fact that the crew doesn't know how to undock the boat and we're halfway through the season, like, he's right. Not only is that hilarious, but he's right to call it out. That would be super frustrating. So, Joao, I get you on that. Now, at the same time, it does feel like he's playing kind of nice and he has all this pressure coming back to make a good impression, right? But in episode 9, we hear Aisha call that exact thing out and warn Chef Tazarina that not all is to be believed with Joao. Now, honestly, guys, I just have to be real. Joao is looking kind of hot, so I get where Tazarina is coming from, but girl, you better keep a close eye on this one. And just a side note, I have a general question for you guys. Is this the hottest group of deck crew on any Below Deck season ever? Like, I think it may be. So, production, I thank you. Now, at this point in the season, I really feel like Below Deck Down Under is hitting its stride. We can put all of that crazy drama with Luke and Laura behind us and get back to some of the fun. But from what I hear, there's a lot of drama towards the end of season 2 of Down Under. And despite seemingly making amends, I think we need to watch Aisha and Joao. Culver and Joao's dynamic should also be interesting to watch too. But I want to hear what you guys think. Are you happy to have Joao back on Below Deck Down Under? And what do you think that means for the rest of the season? Let me know. Earlier this week, I watched The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City season 4 premiere. And while I'll be blogging a full review on tvdeets.com, I wanted to share my initial thoughts with you here with my dedicated podcast listeners. Now, I took so many notes while watching, and when I tell you this premiere is good, I truly mean it. So to be honest, I haven't always been the biggest Salt Lake City fan. I mean, I just couldn't deal with the Jen Shaw of it all, to be honest. But this season, the group is putting the Shawmazing era behind them, and they wear it well. So back this season are Heather Gay, Whitney Rose, Lisa Barlow, and Meredith Marks, with Angie Katsunevis from last season returning as a full-time housewife. And we have a new full-time housewife as well. Her name is Monica Garcia. Now, the iconic Mary Cosby is back as an official friend of the housewives, and I can tell you that she's heavily featured across the premiere. Okay, so there were so many highlights for me, and I want to share all of it, but Bravo has a lot of this info embargoed, so I'm going to do my best to tell you some scoop. Now, here's what I can tell you. Meredith Marks is engaged. A lot of viewers have criticized Meredith for not getting involved in the past, but she proves very early on that we will not be the case with season 4. So she is coming for Whitney, and we love to see it. She is the reason we have Mary Cosby back on the show, and for that, we also have to bow down. Now, speaking of Mary, her return will not disappoint. She looks fantastic, and it's almost like every other line out of her mouth during the premiere is an instant Housewives classic. like Meredith, Mary is engaged and ready to play, and I just loved seeing her back on the screen. Like, it will deliver for you guys. Now, I do need to talk to you about the newbie Monica. I can't give too much away about how she enters the show or her connection to the group, Chencha. But when I say production got this one right, they got this one right. So based off of her look and her energy alone, I really feel like Monica will quickly become a fan favorite. Her connection to the existing group is giving vintage housewives, and production needs to be commended for how they show Monica explaining it all and entering the group. Like, it was just absolutely brilliantly done. So very exciting there. Now, Monica is very feisty and she's very smart, and it honestly feels like some of the other housewives will have met their match with her. I may have only seen her in one episode, but you guys, I'm obsessed. I am Team Monica. Now, my girl Heather Gay also makes an impact in the premiere and is at the center of the group where she belongs. This is fresh off the success of her book, and Heather is excited to have Mary back in the group. And she's also willing to move on with Whitney following their disastrous Ultimate Girls trip. And it's really Heather that is responsible for bringing all of the girls together at the end of the episode for a fresh start party. Now, she's giving center Snowflake with this energy, and it's great to see her fully entwined with the group, because that's always how I have seen Heather, and I love to see her flourishing in that role. Now, you guys know that I interviewed Heather back in March. It was just a few weeks before she started filming season 4 of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Now, at the time, I had heard from sources that Mary would be returning to the show, and I asked Heather about it. And Heather wasn't able to confirm or deny, but she did tell me that Meredith Marks is kind of Mary's connection to the group and had kept in contact with Mary since she left the show. Now, after seeing the premiere, that is totally true, and we honestly owe it to Meredith Marks for keeping Mary Cosby in the mix, so we bow down to you, Meredith. Now, Angie K, Lisa Barlow, and Whitney certainly get their moment in the premiere episode. Like, I think all of their fans are going to be happy, but I have to say, this team wasn't the main focus, and I thought that was pretty interesting. Whitney, especially, didn't even have a solo scene before the party at the end of the episode, so I'm curious to see what that means about her role in the show or her upcoming storylines. We know she feuds with Lisa Barlow later on, but the premiere is certainly Whitney light, aside from like one mini confrontation with Meredith, but I thought that was definitely an interesting choice. Now, all in all, I'm really excited for the new season of Salt Lake City. Production deserves props for the editing and the clever introduction at the start of the episode. That is going to go down, I think, in Housewives history. And all of the women, they're all fully engaged and they're all activated in making what looks like an iconic Real Housewives season. Plus, Mary being back in the group, I can't stress this enough. It just feels right. So this is going to be one glamorous, messy, chaotic Salt Lake City era, and I'm here for it. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the TV Deets podcast. I'll be back next week with an all-new episode, but in the meantime, visit tvdeets.com for the latest reality TV news, and be sure to follow me at TV Deets and at Below Deck Sailing on social for all of the scoop. See you next week.